Barclays of Britain is forced to give up on being a Wall Street-style power player, and many jobs will go.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California and is supported by Kronos, offering cloud-based workforce management solutions to help organizations of all types and sizes achieve their strategic goals. More at Kronos.com. Kronos, workforce innovation that works.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Global Perspective on Business and Economics. The CEO of Barclays Bank, Anthony Jenkins, said today 19,000 of his employees will lose their jobs in the next 3 years, including 7,000 in investment banking. That bank never recovered from the 2008 financial crisis, and it's not been making much money on buying and selling securities lately. This is a shift for Barclays to plain old banking, where depositors leave money and the bank lends it out. The BBC's business editor Kamal Ahmed is following this from London.
This will be a huge restructuring of the bank, and it's all to do with their investment bank. Now, this is the bit of the organisation that possibly slightly unfairly is known as the casino banking operation. So that's the bit that trades in commodities like coal and oil. Barclays was huge in this. Famously, the bank that didn't have a public bailout in 2008, remarkably bought Lehman's, or the operating bits of Lehman's, out of that financial crash. Anthony Jenkins said to me he wants Barclays to be simpler and he wants it to be focused on the basics of banking, current accounts, mortgage lending, business lending.
Barclays is also taking $680 million worth of toxic assets and walling them up into a new so-called bad bank so they don't stink up the rest of the company's balance sheet.
These are parts of the bank in the investment banking arm around things like commodities trading, which are simply not performing for the bank anymore. There's a huge amount of new regulation has come in. They have to keep much more money within the bank against those type of operations. They've simply become non-profitable.
Barclays stock is up 4.7% now. Let's do some more numbers. The FT 100 in London is up 0.5% now. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up. Going into the second day of Federal Reserve Chief Janet Yellen's testimony about the economy, stimulus, and interest rates, the 10-year bond yield is down to 2.63%. The highest end of the real estate market is buzzing. Already this year, three houses in the U.S. have sold for more than $100 million. Just last week, a property in the Hamptons area of New York's Long Island sold for $147 million, the highest ever paid for a single-family house in these United States. Conrad Wilson reports.
High-end real estate is like a new global currency, or even a safety deposit box for the uber-rich.
The wealthy see real estate as a likely source of stability and safety.
Jonathan Miller is a New York real estate consultant. And what he's saying is pretty significant, given the fact that housing prices bore the brunt of the last recession. Still, UCLA's Eric Sussman says real estate that gets this kind of attention is full of risk.
I don't think any economist, any real estate expert would say buying a $100 million home is a safe place to put your money. Because let's face it, you're talking about, again, a very scarce asset with very few potential buyers.
Regardless of whether spending millions on a house is a good idea, Sussman says it's clearly a sign that the wealthiest are feeling pretty good now that the economy is recovering. I'm Conrad Wilson for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Allianz, providing travel insurance and assistance to over 9 million Americans through its affiliated companies in the U.S., AllianzUSA.com. By MassMutual, a company owned by its policy owners and committed to putting them first. Learn more at MassMutual.com/mutuality. And by Battelle, solving what matters most in national security, health and life sciences, energy, and the environment. More at Battelle.org.
Moving on to you and your eventual Social Security, Marketplace's economics guy Chris Farrell and I were emailing the other day, and he wrote something so astonishing, it threw me into an existential crisis. We spend our lives worrying about dying prematurely, right? It is the human condition. Farrell here says that maybe the bigger risk is what, Chris?
I'm sorry I threw you into an existential crisis, but it's living longer. The concern is, what if you outlive your assets? What if you haven't saved enough for your old age? So it's not about dying prematurely. It's about living for a long time.
I still worry about dying prematurely. But as a personal finance issue, I take your point. And this, of course, applies to perhaps the biggest pension system that we have in this country, the official one, Social Security.
That's right. So if you mention Social Security, you know, the conversation immediately goes to, you know, you can file for Social Security at age 62. That's the earliest. And most of us have that conversation. The latest you can file for Social Security is age 70. If you wait past age 70, you don't get any benefits. What I think we need to do is reframe this discussion about Social Security. Forget age 62 for a moment. Let's start the discussion. When you'd be filing for Social Security should be age 70. That's the goal. So start with age 70 and then work your way down.
Now, to be clear, Chris, I mean, of course, there are benefits from Social Security after age 70. It's just there's no added benefit of delaying past 70.
Correct. If you wait till age 70, you know, your benefit on average is about 75% higher than filing at age 62.
We're talking about this, though, but Social Security, if you actually look at the payments you get, is not opulent.
No.
It's often seen as a supplement to what you perhaps you could save on your own.
It is not opulent at all. It really provides a floor. And it's a decent floor, and it's an important floor. And how it fits into, are you going to be working longer? Are you going to work part-time? What kind of retirement savings do you have? This is a holistic discussion. And I think in having that discussion with yourself and your household, you should start at age 70, and then for good reasons, you can file earlier. But let's reframe this discussion around age 70, not at age 62.
Chris Farrell keeps an eye on matters economics for us. Chris, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Indeed, economists have long established that we discount the future, that it's easier for people to make money decisions about the here and now, yet the future is hazy and tougher to worry about, except if you are the NBC Universal part of Comcast and the International Olympic Committee. There's news NBC is paying $7.7 billion for rights to broadcast the Olympics through Stardate 2032. And how will we view Olympic gymnastics or bobsled runs 18 years from now? Holographic projections, retinal implants. One thing is now clear through the letters NBC. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From the letters APM, American Public Media.
Ever wonder why books sometimes have huge discounts?
Books are the one significant product left in the marketplace today in which the manufacturer actually prints the suggested retail price on the product.
I'm David Gura. We'll look at the practice of book discounting next time on Marketplace from APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.